When someone in your family is going through depression, it's hard to know what to say. And I said everything wrong. I'm Sam. Our family went through it. And I just kept saying, come on, let's get it together. The thing I should have been saying is, let's get you to the center, a place of hope. It's a place for you or a place for someone you love who's struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, eating disorders. So many success stories. It's personal to me. They've actually saved the lives of people I love. If you felt like, I don't know what to do to dig out of this really dark place, and you've tried everything and you can't think of what to do next, make a phone call right now. Call the Center, a Place of Hope.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888-726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the Center, a Place of Hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Welcome to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. And on behalf of our hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help AACC equip the church and provide Christian mental health care to those in need, visit aaccfoundation.org to donate. Your gift will ensure that this program and your station remain on the air. Now, let's join our host, Dr. Tim Clinton.
Well, thanks, Jim. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton. My guest today is a renowned defender of the faith and of the family. His name, Michael Ferris. Mike serves as the general counselor of the National Religious Broadcasters Organization. Ferris previously served as president and CEO of Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF. And he's widely recognized for his successful work on both the national and international stage. Ferris was the founding president of both the Homeschool Legal Defense Association and Patrick Henry College. He continues to serve as chairman of the board of HSLDA and chancellor emeritus of Patrick Henry College. Graduated from Western Washington State College, magna cum laude, with a bachelor's degree in political science, and he followed with his Juris Doctorate from Gonzaga University with honors. Ferris has specialized in constitutional appellate litigation. In that capacity, he's argued before the appellate courts of 13 states, 8 federal courts of appeal, and the United States Supreme Court, where he in 2018 successfully argued NIFLA versus Becerra, resulting in a free speech victory for California's pro-life pregnancy centers. Ferris has testified many times before the House and Senate. He's the author of over 15 books, as well as Law Review and other scholarly and popular articles. He and his wife, Vicki, have 10 children, a lot of grandchildren. Mike, what a delight to have you. Thank you for joining us.
It is great to be with you, Tim. We've been friends for a while, and I'm glad to be able to see you face-to-face.
Well, so appreciate you and the work God's done and is doing in and through you. As we get started, I want to go back to prior to the election for a moment. People were genuinely afraid of the weaponization of systems of government. They were scared to death of the FBI, the DOJ, the IRS, and more. They heard stories of 75-year-old grandmas being locked up for peacefully protesting or praying outside an abortion clinic. I remember Senator Josh Hawley challenging FBI Director Chris Wray about targeting people of faith, Catholics, talking about people being domestic terrorists and more. And there was a lot of fear. I think there's still a lot of fear out there and concern about what's happened and where we're at.
Well, indeed, one of the episodes that often is talked about is from my home county of Loudoun County, Virginia, where the officials in Loudoun County contacted the FBI director, calling the parent activists at the school board meetings in my county as domestic terrorists. And the FBI ran with that. You'll remember that episode.
I do.
And so people were not being afraid without reason. If you want to put it in legal terms, there was probable cause to be afraid. And so, obviously, after November, that's changed in many respects, but there's still the same things happening to state governments all over the country. And so that atmosphere has shifted a bit, but it is not gone.
I want to go to January 20th, the inauguration of President Trump. A lot of people talk about it being a change of power. And yes, it is. It's a change of power. But also, I think people began talking about how really it was a change of worldview. And this first little jaunt, if you will, in the new administration has been kind of breathtaking. Just some of your reflections on what's happened and where you see this going.
Well, it feels like and looks like chaos in many respects. Although the ability of the administration to take one thing, another thing, and another thing, this is planned. This is not chaotic in execution. It just looks chaotic because they've got people scrambling all over the place. And when you're trying to dismantle a hornet's nest of fraud and evil, really, is what I was struggling for. The word evil is the right word.
I would agree with you on that.
And that it's going to look chaotic when you know this has been built up over decades. This is not a one-time thing. We've had Republican presidents and better people in there, and that just slows it down a little bit here and there. But we have never seen anything like this ever in our lifetime, and it's refreshing. It's a little scary at times, but it's the right trajectory. Can I put my sanction on every single thing that's been said and happened? No, I just don't know enough about some of it. But the trajectory, I endorse the trajectory as strongly as possible because we have got a situation where the government's absolutely out of control, especially when you measure it vis-a-vis the Constitution. They are not behaving in a constitutional fashion, and something had to be done.
I think the people are stunned at DOGE, if you will, this Department of Government Efficiency. Elon Musk is leading the way there. And this expose of all this waste, fraud, and abuse. Mike, just your take. I sit back and think there's just no way that it could be that bad or that seemingly corrupt. But how do you deny this? And it's like the American people are going with it. They're saying, you know what? If that's true, keep it going. Yeah. Keep pushing. We want to go as far as you need to go.
Indeed. And one of the upshots of this, I believe, is that politically it's been thought impossible to talk about the entitlement programs. You can't touch those. And they occupy such a big percentage of the government. Medicare, Social Security, the two big entitlement programs. There are a few others. Well, the reality is you could not touch all the legitimate users of Medicare and Social Security and still cut a whole lot of stuff out of there because it's just been, people not supposed to be getting it. And it looks like government programs have been hidden in the Social Security budget and hidden in the Medicare budget. And, not to mention the U.S. AID, that is just such a wicked, it's just so profoundly, overwhelmingly evil in what they've been doing and wasting people's money and, promoting a political agenda that is contrary to the American people. It's encouraging and refreshing. And I'm reminded of a thing in history. Thomas Cranmer was the first Protestant Archbishop of Canterbury under Henry VIII. And up until then, it was illegal to have the Bible in English out in public. And he, because Henry VIII let him, put the Bible in English, Tyndale's translation, out to the public. Well, Bloody Mary came along after Henry VIII and tried to pull it back. There was no getting it back. Once the Bible penetrated the society of England, they could repress it, they could punish you, but its power was out there, it was released, it was unleashed. And I'm not saying that what's going on in Washington is of the magnitude of the Word of God. That's not true, but there's a parallel that the people will never go back to allowing, things will change and go back and forth in there'll be political swings, but the idea that we're not going to know what's going on anymore is unacceptable. People are going to want to know. Sunshine is going to penetrate everything, and there is no going back from that principle. We'll spend this, we'll spend that, but we're going to spend it in the daylight from now on.
Yeah. When light starts to expose that which is in the dark, they say when you flip the lights on, the creatures start scrambling. And we're seeing a lot of pushback. There's a lot of screaming going on. And we knew intuitively that was going to happen. It's a pretty difficult moment. Now, in the midst of it, we're seeing unelected judges begin to file all kinds of crazy lawsuits, trying to stop everything, reverse some of the policies that the administration's trying to put in place, and more. And people are getting confused again about who controls the government. If the president issues an executive order, and then you've got an unelected official, a judge out here in some circuit court somewhere or whatever, saying, no, we're not going to do that. And then it's like, well, what's happening? Can you walk us through
Sure.
what's in your mind and how we should be thinking and reflecting on it?
Well, to put a finer point on, there's a democratic litigation machine that's out there. It consists in large part of the states where they have a Democratic attorney general. They're a big part of the litigation strategy. But there are organizations like the ACLU and many other left-leaning groups and a lot of major law firms that are engaged in this that are left-leaning in their approach. And they are filing a legal blizzard. They cherry-pick the courts that they know they've got a better chance in. And so you can't pick a particular judge, but you can pick a court, and you know that out of the five judges in this district, four of them were appointed by Obama or something like that, or Clinton and Obama. And you go to a district where you know you've got a really good shot of getting a judge that's aligned with your worldview, and then the judges go with the worldview. Now, if judges were following the law all the time, I would be more sympathetic with what they're doing. But they make up the law so much of the time.
Yeah, they legislate from the bench.
That's right. And so, I mean, Roe versus Wade was the classic legislation from the bench. Obergefell, same-sex marriage, was legislation from the bench. And we're making up rights, making up law, and not following the Constitution as written, then I don't have I don't have any sympathy for that, frankly, because that, you talk about, we're going to destroy democracy. The easiest way in the world to destroy democracy is to have judges rule from the bench in a way that does not follow the law as was written by the founders who wrote the principles and the controlling words of the Constitution and other, it wasn't just the founders because the 14th Amendment was 100 years later and so on. But the people that wrote the various parts of the Constitution, the original meaning needs to be followed day in and day out. That's the rule of law. It's not the rule of law where judges can interpret to mean anything they want. And when they're making policy decisions rather than judicial decisions.
So connect the dots for us then to the Supreme Court, because most people believe that the current administration will prevail in a majority of these cases. And then if there is dispute or whatever and it's needed to go to the Supreme Court, then the Supreme Court makes the decision here. And talk to us again about that judicial branch and the significance of the Supreme Court and where you see that composition right. And how it looks as you look to the future.
Well, there are six justices on the Supreme Court that were appointed by Republican presidents, three appointed by Democratic presidents. There's a range of opinion among the six Republican-appointed judges. It wouldn't be accurate to call them Republican judges or Democrat judges because they're not aligned as individuals with those parties, but it's fair to say who appointed them. And among the Republicans, there is a continuum where there's more, it would be fair to call them moderates, and there's more that are consistent conservatives. And there's about three and three of the six. And so I think that many of the cases that are get to the Supreme Court are likely to affirm what President Trump is doing. It's unlikely that he would win them all because, mistakes are going to be made. Procedural mistakes may be made. And so, I think that we'll lose fewer on the merits than we will on procedure. And so I think overall, it will be, you know, a good outcome eventually. My problem with it is it's going to take a while to get there. It'll take 18 months to 2 years normally for a case of this kind to get from filing in the federal district court through the Court of Appeals at the circuit courts and then to the Supreme Court. Probably 18 months to 2 years is a fast track. And so now you can do it faster in emergency circumstances. And the magnitude of these cases, they'll be fast-tracked. I mean, the fastest you could do it would be 3 or 4 months. And that's not impossible here in some instances. But I think we'll see mostly positive outcomes. And if we get a series of decisions that are mostly positive and can get that all wrapped up in the next couple of years, then at that point, if the American people return Republican majorities in the midterm elections, then the groundwork will be cleared pretty well.
I think a lot of people took a deep breath, sigh of relief, when the president won the election, President Trump. But the work is right now. This is a throwdown going on. Yeah. And we've got to just pray earnestly that God would lead us. Hey, you're listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton, your host, our special in-studio guest, Michael Ferris. Mike is, when you think of the name Alliance Defending Freedom, then you know who Michael Ferris is. God has used him in incredible ways to be a voice, a champion, especially around religious liberty and more. But he's opened up, if you will, that place in Washington, D.C., so Christians could understand what was happening and to find their voice and influence, especially for a time such as this. Mike, I want to come to a real kind of heartbeat of yours and something I care a lot about, and that is our First Amendment rights, religious liberty. I guess I'd like just a simple definition from you about why religious liberty is so important and why we've got to fight. It's our most fundamental right.
Well, I wrote a book called The History of Religious Liberty, and the point of it was to say that it didn't come from the Enlightenment. It came from Bible-believing Christians who laid their lives on the line year after year, decade after decade, century after century, basically from the time of William Tyndale to the adoption of the Bill of Rights. And so the reason that the Christians believe that is that government has no jurisdiction over the heart, soul, and mind of man. Mm-hmm. That's the principle we have to understand. This is outside their jurisdiction. That means religious freedom is for everybody. Free speech is for everybody, not just people we agree with, for everybody. Only a Christian worldview has ever brought that into existence, but it's because we believe in the jurisdiction of God rather than the jurisdiction of government.
So our rights don't come from government, our rights come from God.
Absolutely. And it's designed that way because it's allegiance to God. So why is it important to have religious liberty? Because allegiance to God is the most important thing in any of our lives. And it also is the catalyst for all of our freedoms. We would have no provision of the Bill of Rights but for those central core things that basically, historically, arose out of the battle to get the Bible in the hands of the common people. So why is it important? You can't have any freedom if you don't have freedom of religion, you don't have freedom of speech.
Michael, I wanted to ask you about executive orders for a moment. The president's making these moves. We had mentioned the Religious Liberty Commission, right. Executive Task Force on Anti-Christian Bias and more, but he's had a number of different, hundreds of executive orders.
Right.
They are only as good, if you will, as the president in the term.
Right.
Legislation is critical to put these things into law.
Right.
Right? Speak to us about your concern over the EOs and how or what you see happening or maybe not happening in a direction where we could codify some of this into law.
Well, I'm a pretty strong stickler for the rule that presidents aren't supposed to make law, that Congress is supposed to make law. But here's the deal. Most executive orders that I object to, or regulations that I object to, administrative regulations by the EPA or any other agency, they're the same thing from a constitutional perspective. They're laws made by people in the administrative branch rather than laws made by Congress. Mm-hmm. If they affect private people and private property, I don't like using administrative law for that purposes. Right. If it's the internal control of the government, well, there's a lot more leeway then. The president has great power for the internal control of the government. So shutting down this agency, shutting down that agency, but his range of lawful ability is much, much greater. But if we want permanent changes that last, getting things into statutory law is much better than having them as executive orders. Yeah. So as much as we can do that, that's the best alternative in many cases. In some cases, it would be good to put things in the Constitution. Like, for example, I think we should put in the Constitution that there are only 9 justices on the Supreme Court so that we can't do court packing.
Because of that, court packing thing was a big issue.
The next time the Democrats control of all three branches,
they're
going to stack the court, and the gun rights of the Americans will be
gone.
The first thing to go.
They're gone. We're fighting time here, Mike. I can talk to you all day. I want to talk to you about school choice and parental rights before we go. You've been a strong advocate in this lane forever. And it's really important that people hear where we're at and how they should be thinking, what they should be praying, and how they should engage here.
The first case I argued in the Supreme Court in the 1980s was a form of a school choice case. It was whether a man who was going blind could use his vocational rehabilitation funds to go to Bible college. And the state of Washington said, no, that violated the Establishment Clause. I won that case 9-0 in the U.S. Supreme Court.
Wow.
So I've been working on this issue a long time. I want to eradicate the monopoly of the public schools over the education of kids in this country. But I want to do it in a way that preserves the freedom of those schools so that, you know, people say, with the shekels come the shackles. And that's possibly true. It depends to me on how you write it. And if it's in the line of people, I keep more of my own money in the form of a tax deduction or something like that from my private school. I favor that methodology more than I favor direct vouchers because I would like to preserve freedom. But in some form or another, we've got to destroy the monopoly of the public schools. And I've got preferences of that, but the strong principle is that parents need to be realistically free to choose wherever their kids are going to be educated.
Michael, it's a real honor to share the microphone with you. I'm going to pray that God continues to lead and direct you and pray a hedge around you and your family. Before you go, if people want to learn more about you, how they maybe can support, engage, pray for you, where can they go?
Well, NRB's website at nrb.org will contain things about the litigation that I'm doing right now. But the only thing I do on social media is Facebook, and that's Michael Farris on Facebook, F-A-R-R-I-S. I have about 40,000 people that follow me, and I'd love to have a few more. And I talk about funny stuff, but mostly legal. And so it would be fun to have them.
Hey, on behalf of my son, Zach, what a delight to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
If someone in your family has depression or anxiety, it's hard to know what to do. We went through that. I'm Sam. The center is a place of hope. Lives are being healed. God is changing families.
Coming to the center, it's just life-altering. My relationship with my husband, my relationship with my family.
Struggling to keep it all together, or no one knows, or you're hiding things, or you feel like you've hit some crisis.
It's amazing to think that there could be so much change.
Man, I'm so grateful for the center. It's so helpful for me, and I'm so hopeful.
The center, a place of hope. Call today. A lot of people are surprised that insurance can help cover this.
Dive in, give yourself all to it. Watch what happens.
Call the Center, a Place of Hope, right now.
Hey, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, president of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you or someone you love is in a tough spot, stuck, maybe in need of serious help, someone to talk to, you need somebody, I want you to write down this number for the Center, a Place of Hope. The number is 888- 888- 726-8125. That number again, 888-726-8125. I think if you write that number down, you're going to be glad you did. I have referred a number of people, a great number of people, to this ministry for special mental health care. They're outstanding. I can give them highest praise. That number again, 888-726-8125. Speak to our colleagues, the admissions team at the center, a place of hope. Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be, especially Christ-centered help. Our friends at A Place for Hope, they're here to help. I hope you'll call today, and may God bless you.
Asking for help is hard. Finding help shouldn't be. At Christian Care Connect, our mission is to connect those seeking help with a provider who offers the faith-based care they need. At CCC, we offer free mental health assessments for the user to help gauge their psychological and emotional well-being, as well as free self-help blog resources to help educate readers on topics such as depression, anxiety, and more. Christian Care Connect bridges the gap between those seeking help and the caregivers offering it, fostering connections rooted in clinical excellence. If you're looking for help, it's closer than you think. And if you're a provider who's ready to offer help, this site is for you too. Visit ChristianCareConnect.com to find the help you need or get listed as a provider. That's ChristianCareConnect.com.